On today's episode of Brad on Will, we're going to be covering the first four Rockets game and a preview of the Utah Jazz game on Wednesday. All right, and welcome back to another episode of Brad on Will. I'm your first host, as always, Will. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Bias Houston. Over there, we do a lot of different content aggregation, anything you need as far as stats, highlights. We started doing the post-game space at every single game, at Rockets game, that is. You can come in and post your opinions on what you just watched that night. I'll quickly plug and shout out Brad on Will on Instagram and Twitter. We started expanding over to TikTok and YouTube Shorts now, so if you guys can continue to show love over there, leave a like, leave a comment, subscribe. We really appreciate the support on that front. And what's up, Brad?
What's up? I'll keep it quick. As always, I'm your other host, Brad. You can catch me on Instagram and Twitter at BradoNBA. All your favorite stats, highlights, I got you covered there. But for today, we have a special guest. We have the Andrew with us. So it's good to finally have you on. So Andrew, for our listeners, let them know where they can find you on social media.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. Glad to be here. Everyone can find me on Twitter at ASukupTX, Andrew Sukup, Texas.
Perfect. Yeah, go ahead, Will. We got my fellow Christian Wood agenda pusher on the show with me. This is the first time we've had two of us in the same room, so it's good to finally be here. But we got a lot to talk about today because this is the first podcast we've done since the season started. The last time we talked to you guys was KPJ's extension, so we're here to recap everything that's happened up until from that point up until now. So we got four games to talk about, a lot of things that happened in those four games to discuss. I'm going to start off real quick with the very first thing. Before the first game even started, we had the biggest, probably the second most controversial topic on Rockets Twitter. The first one we're going to get into a little bit later. But the second most controversial topic was Alperen Şengün coming off the bench. It was kind of teased and rumored to be happening by Fagan and Kelly Eco. In their different articles that we kind of started getting like hints like this could be happening. And then before the game started on, I guess that was Wednesday against the Atlanta Hawks, we finally got it confirmed that Şengün was indeed coming off the bench and that Bruno Fernando was going to be the starting center for that game. So we can kind of get into what that means. But I want your just initial reaction, Andrew, and what are your thoughts on Alperen Şengün coming off the bench?
It was definitely a surprise after everything we heard since the Christian Wood trade earlier this year. Is like, okay, we're clearing the decks for Şengün to join the crowd. So once you get past the initial shock, you can kind of see the logic to at least try it, to separate out Şengün as the hub style offense from the high pick and roll, spread pick and roll with KPJ and Jalen, because that's not Şengün's forte, right? Fernando, it's the one thing he probably does better than Şengün. So, the signal to me was that they're clearly prioritizing the development of KPJ and Jalen over Şengün, at least to start here. And we'll see how it goes.
So, what did you think about that, Brett?
Yeah, it surprised me, but at the same time, when news kind of broke and circulated, people were teasing about it, happening, Şengün could potentially come off the bench. It made sense because at the end of the day, if you're going to play Alperen Şengün, you have to utilize him to his strengths. And he's pretty much useless out there if he doesn't have the ball in his hands at this point of his career, right? He can't really shoot a three ball like that, even though he's been shooting a little well in these first four games. But again, he's not a threat off ball. So if he doesn't have the ball in his hands and he can't create, work out in the post high or low, or facilitate, there's no use for him out there. So this move to the bench is to help him. I wouldn't even call it a demotion. It's just to get him more touches. And at this point in time, Alperen Şengün is top three on the team in touches. So that was the point of the move. Get him more touches. Make sure he's able to, play his game. That's what he needs to do. So in that case, I do like the move because I want him utilized the right way. I want him to start, of course, as I'm sure most Rockets fans do. But there's no point if he's not, going to be utilized the right way. If he's just, as Andrew said, if he's just going to be, send screens and rolling and not really getting touches, it's just pointless. And, on that same topic, I do want to give a shout out to Bruno Fernando, who stepped in and everyone was mad about it, especially Will on Twitter and the Twitter spaces that day. But Bruno came in, had 7 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 blocks. and no turnovers. You know, that assist to turnover ratio of 7-0, that hadn't been done by a Rocket center since Rob Sampson and Akeem Olajuwon. A random stat, but it's a fun stat. And it shows how well that Bruno Fernando played that game. So, yeah, so for Sengun, I would like to see him start eventually. But, I mean, look, if they're not going to be able to make it work with the starters, I'm cool with him getting his touches and the production off the bench. It's looking good, so I have no issue with it.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of touched on what I was going to say a little bit towards the end. I initially was very upset to see that he was coming off the bench. I'm not the biggest Sengun truther out there. I like him. I think he's a really good player. But I think that there is a world where Sengun is, like, long-term, his best place to be utilized is off the bench in that kind of, I wouldn't say six-man role, but it's just the backup five role. Because, you know, his shortcomings on defense, right? I don't really want to hash into all that. We all know what that is. But, like, because of those areas, and, like, what you kind of touched on, Brad, where if he doesn't have the ball in his hands, he's not really as effective. I kind of thought that, you know, a guy like that might be best utilized off the bench. And so if this was any other, like, scenario, I'd be okay with it. But what's frustrating me was that we were bringing him off the bench for Bruno Fernando, who up until that point, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, I thought he was kind of underwhelming in preseason. I think he had that pretty solid game against San Antonio. But then those next three games, I think he was, like, made it best. I think he was just all right. Like, it was, yeah, he wasn't nothing to write home about. And so I'm like, well, we have this guy who we hope and plan to be at least, like, I know we're gonna talk about it towards the end, but I know Andrew's a big Wembanyama guy. But until we get Wembanyama, like, he is the center of the future. Like, that's what we're kind of, you know, positioning him to be, yeah, at this point.
Absolutely.
So it's like we have this, you know, number 16 in the 2021 draft. Showed a whole lot of potential last year. I think one of the reasons we did go ahead and part ways with Christian Wood was so we could give Sengun kind of the reins at the center position. So it was kind of confused to me that we had this guy who I think, in my opinion, has a lot of potential coming off the bench for somebody who I think is, like, barely on an NBA team. Obviously, Sengun was struggling a little bit in preseason. He played – I say he struggled in preseason. He struggled in one game, but he struggled in that one game.
Miami.
It was Miami, yeah.
Yeah.
Against Miami. And there was a bunch of, like, things, articles coming out about his confidence not being where it was and him needing the ball in his hands. So I kind of viewed, I forgot which one y'all said, it's not a demotion, but it's more of like, we're going to put you on the bench, let you get your confidence back, let you play your game. Cause, you know, as it is currently constructed, we are prioritizing Jalen and KPJ. And those are two guys who need the ball in their hands. They're very ball dominant. And if you're not going to be able to be effective without the ball in your hands, like, let's just go and just put you on the bench. You can have the ball in your hands, or you can kind of build your confidence back up. The two things I want to say, and I'll ask y'all if y'all any more comments on this. One, I think that it is on Silas to find a way for KPJ, Jalen, and Sengun to all coexist together on the court. Like, I don't think that the solution to them not being, like, perfect fix right now is to bench one of them. I think I think they're talented enough, and, like, their games complement each other enough to where we can find a middle ground between Jalen Green and KBJ being ball dominant and Sengun getting his touches. I think there's a middle ground there that Silas has to find. And then the last thing I was going to say is if Sengun cannot find that middle ground, this isn't just for Sengun, this is for anybody, but, like, if any of these guys on this roster can't find a way, especially now we know Jalen's the franchise player, KBJ just got extended, and I think the organization's kind of suggested to us that they kind of view him, I'm not sort of saying, like, vain as Jalen, but they view him pretty highly. If anybody on this team can't coexist with those guys, well, like, your time on this team is going to be pretty numbered. Like, you're probably not going to be here too long. So, like, Sengun, but anything else, he needs to find a way to coexist with them as well. So I just think I hope that he gets his game. You know, like, he's been looking pretty good. We're going to talk about that too. He's been looking pretty good so far. And, you know, I'm hoping that this is not a long-term thing. I think I hope he starts at some point in time during this season. But if anything, y'all want to add anything else to that before we go to the next topic?
I'm good on that topic.
Yeah. No, I think you hit it, you know, but it's not the end. It's not permanent. He's got a chance to move back into the starting lineup, which, you know, let's see it happen.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I mean, I think, Brad, you kind of touched on the next topic too, which was we want to talk about Bruno's game. So I was wrong. I had spent that first half of the day saying that I was pretty upset with Sengun coming off the bench, and then Bruno Fernando went out and had probably, I wouldn't say, maybe it's his best game, maybe not. He had some pretty good games to end last season, but he had one of, if not his best game in a Rockets uniform, game one. Brad Mews, I do not have the stats pulled up right now, so I'm
I don't either, but he was, again, 7 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 blocks, okay. 0 turnovers. He was 3 for 3 from the field, 1 for 2 from the line. So, yeah, he had a good game.
Yeah. So, Andrew, what was your, what were your thoughts on Bruno telling me to shut up that day?
I mean, I had no idea he could pass like that. Yeah. That was the big surprise, I think, probably for almost everybody watching him, you know, the way he found the shooters in off the short roll. That was great. If he keeps doing that, Şengün's going to have to really work to claim that spot in the starting lineup. Because playing off KPJ and Jalen, that's almost exactly what you need, right? The only thing he would missing is a 3-point shot. But if he's doing that, you don't need him to shoot threes. So yeah. Great, but it's only one game. We'll see if that continues or not.
That's like, because he got hurt in that Memphis game, and we haven't really seen him since. So you're exactly right. But, go ahead, Brett.
Yeah, a few things that stood out to me. So I was at that first game in Atlanta. It was buzzing. Everyone was excited. And Bruno came out the gates with those 2 blocks, and everyone in the stadium was like, whoa, like, what's going on? Like, who is this guy? Even though he played in Atlanta. But so he had those nice 2 blocks. And then I want to point out those two assists that stood out to me. One that Andrew mentioned. There was one on a short roll. He grabbed it in the middle of the paint and kicked it to the corner to Jabari. That was a beautiful pass, and Jabari sunk the three. Another one was a backdoor cut to Jalen. That was a beautiful bounce pass. So those two passes impressed me. As Andrew said, I did not realize he could pass like that. You know, I thought he was just a post-centric kind of player, which we saw last year a little bit, and then, you know, pick and roll kind of guy. But, yeah, the assist to turnover ratio, again, 7-0, that had to impress everybody. Everyone saw that box score at the end of the game and said, whoa, Bruno had 7 assists. So I had to go back and watch the game and see where those 7 assists came from. So it was good to see that. Again, as Will touched on, he did get hurt in the next game. So I'm interested to see how he comes out looking when he's healthy again. But that's everything I had to say about Bruno. Impressive outing in that first game.
Yeah, I think, like I said, Bruno, before the game, I was saying I think he was kind of a mid defender, and I thought he was not that great of a vertical threat, and he was both against the Hawks. He was a pretty good defender. You said you got what, 2 blocks?
Is that what two nice blocks too.
Yeah, two blocks. He was active and aggressive on defense. It wasn't like I don't think those were like padded stats. I think that was like legit defense that day. And then he was being a legit lob threat. I was wrong. I'll be the first to admit I was wrong about that. And then it did kind of help Şengün's game to come off the bench and be a little bit more ball dominant, and not have to, you know, be the pick and roll lob threat that Fernando seems to excel at being, at least in that one game he was. But that kind of segues into like the next topic too, was Şengün did have that kind of underwhelming game it wasn't underwhelming, but it wasn't as good as we wanted it to be. Jalen and KPJ, they had, I think, 7 turnovers together, and then Şengün had like 6 turnovers by himself, and it was like 6 turnovers where it wasn't like he was trying to fit pass through tight windows that kept getting picked off. They were like lazy dribble handoff turnovers that kept getting picked off. So he had, like I said, I don't think he had a bad game, but it definitely was not a good one. And a lot of that was because of the turnovers. He did, however, have a really good game against the Grizzlies. I need to be on my job better and pull up these stats so I can read them off. But Brad, do you have the Şengün stats from the Grizzlies game?
If I had to guess, he had 21.
I got you. I'll find it.
21.
I got 12, right here. 23 points and 9 for 13 shooting. He even hit a three with 12 rebounds.
There it is.
And yeah, one assist. The only bad thing, he only hit 4 out of 10 free throws that game.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah,
that sounds right. Yep.
Yeah, so he had a game where he looked more of like the Alperen Şengün that we all knew and fell in love with last season. So Andrew, once again, you're the guest; you take the floor first. What did you see from Alperen Şengün that, you know, that stood out to you that game?
I'm trying to remember that particular game. I was there, and it's harder to really concentrate honestly when you're live in the stadium. I don't think he was matched up too often. No, I think he got some good points against Steven Adams using his quickness to get around Adams, which isn't easy. And then I'm also seeing here he got 5 offensive rebounds, so real putting real work on the boards. So I think that was clearly his best game of the season. And then so that was good. He wasn't trying, if I recall, to do too much with his passing. Right. Sometimes he gets a little out of control trying to do things, but he wasn't there. He was more under control. He keeps playing like that. You know, I think, you know, he's going to have a good year.
I'll say this. What stood out to me from him, it was good for me to see at least, you know, he's getting on the boards this year. Another random stat, but Şengün is, you know, one of the best players in the NBA right now in boxing out. And that's the reason why he's getting a lot of rebounds. That first game, he had 9 rebounds. In that Memphis game, he had 12 rebounds, you know, so he's getting a lot of rebounds. He's boxing out really well. This team used to be terrible at rebounding, and he's creating second chance points for the Rockets. In particular, you know, that Memphis game, he had 5 offensive boards. So, you know, outside of that, again, it's good to see him getting his touches, as I mentioned in the first segment. And with those touches, he's able to produce, you know, at a high level, as Andrew said, 9-for-13, I believe. And that's what I want to see from him. You know, if he's going to come off the bench, I want to see him utilize to his strengths the way I watched him when he was with Turkey during the Eurobasket. You know, he was the priority, and I want to see him being the priority when it's his unit and he has his own little bench unit. So great game from him in that second one, amazing bounce back. And even the first one, he had 15-9, just too many turnovers. But the scoring is there with his own unit. So that's promising for me to see.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I'll touch on what y'all said really briefly. It was just, for me, I was just happy to see him look like his old self again. He wasn't looking like the Şengün that we saw from that one preseason game. And then, you know, even in the season opener, he had a solid game just looking at the numbers. But you could tell he wasn't really comfortable or, like, wasn't really playing the game that he wanted to play. And so I was glad to see him just out there smiling again. He had that I don't know if it was a putback or just a really tough finish. And then Tari came in to, you know, and chest bumped him, and they were both just mean mugging the crowd. Like, it was good to see him have fun at playing basketball again. I hadn't seen him just look like he was having fun playing basketball. So I was definitely happy to see him bounce back, took care of the ball a little bit better. He was able to get his usual post touches and then, you know, work out of there. So, you know, it was good to see that. But somebody else who did have a really good game, and this is probably the most encouraging thing from that game, also encouraging thing from the entire season, Jalen Green. I do have the stats from that game pulled up. He was going bucket for bucket with Ja Morant. And obviously Ja Morant ended up going off and putting this out of the game. But, you know, especially in that, I think it was like the second or third quarter, they were going like bucket for bucket with each other. So that game, he had 33 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists. He was 13-21 from the field, 4-5 from 3, and 3-4 from the free throw line. So, like, just insanely efficient, insane numbers. He looked like a legit superstar. It was looking like there was nothing that the defense could do to stop him or slow him down that day. So, Andrew, man, what did you see from our superstar in the making that game?
I saw a superstar in the making is what I saw. And you step back, just look. I really like what Silas is doing in having Jalen – he guarded Trey and he guarded Ja on the defensive end. Athletic, long. I think it was a great matchup, and he did pretty darn well with it. But on offense, though, I tweeted this during the game because I was sitting on the baseline at that game, and the Rockets in the first half, Rockets were on that side. Ja could not stay in front of him. He'd get the ball on the wing or at the top, one move and he was gone. Right. You know, Ja's one of the most athletic guys in the NBA, and Jalen was going by him like he was standing still. Definite superstar in the making, and if the shooting he's demonstrating so far this year actually sticks, it's going to be really remarkable.
Yeah, if that I think he's shooting right now 13-for-27 as a whole from 3. So if that sticks, that's definitely going to be remarkable. I hope it does, but outside of that. You know, Jalen, you know, defensively, he did look good in that game against Memphis, in my opinion. He was on Jaw for 5 minutes and 28 seconds, and he held on to 0-for-3 shooting. But one thing he can work on, he can work at, you know, fighting around those screens. He got caught a few times, which gave Jaw some free lanes to the basket, and that was his bread and butter that game, outside of hitting 5 threes. But, you know,
Jalen – It's hard to get around Steven Adams screens.
That is true. It is hard to get around
Steven Adams screens. Illegal screens, too.
Yeah, and while I'm on the topic of defense, Will, we have that beautiful graphic that I gave to you that you can throw
okay,
up there.
Okay, which one? Because there's
it's gonna be the one about the Hawks game, and then I'll segue in back to the Jalen defense.
I'm assuming it's this one you want to talk about.
Yeah, let's see. Yeah, really quickly. Yeah, so he did really good on Trae Young. You know, held him to 1-for-9 from the field, and 0-for-5 from 3. You guys probably remember that play where Jalen blocked the Trae Young 3 ball and got the dunk on the other end. You know, little things like that. Jalen's been, you know, quick to close out this year. And he's just played really good defense. And even in that Memphis game, he played good defense as well. So it's good to see Jalen, you know, trying to prioritize being a two-way guy. And, you know, outside of that, as Andrew touched on, you know, one step and Jalen was gone. He has blazing speed. There was times he's literally at the top of the key, one move, boom, right to the basket. Easy buckets. And that's what he needs to, you know, really work on this year, because he isn't shooting the best right now from two. He did in that Memphis game, but once he's able to start finishing in the paint and, you know, maybe the mid-range game, maybe his floaters have been off, and the mid-ranges is what's kind of been killing him, especially in that Milwaukee game, then he's really going to just take off, because he has insane efficiency right now from three, from the free throw line, and he's still only shooting 46%. So he's not a bad player inside the arc. It's four games in. So once he is able to put that together, yeah, the sky's the limit. He's already averaging 24 points on good efficiency. I think he can jump to elite efficiency, you know, once he gets right inside the paint, but, or inside the arc, I should say. But that's all I had to touch on.
I saw earlier at the rim, he's shooting about 59%.
And that's so solid. That's solid. Yeah.
That's fine. Yeah. So it's the mid range, you know, the floater in the mid range game. He's not been hitting.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's not a bad mid-range shooter. As we saw at the end of last year, he started to turn it on, you know, after, you know, the All-Star break. So I'm pretty sure, and him and his trainer, Mike Hill, have been working on that in the offseason, as I read in a Kelly Eichel article. So we'll see it soon. We're four games in. So I think, exactly, you know, Jalen's going to display that.
Yeah. So I want to touch on one thing, too, that we're seeing from Jalen. That's pretty interesting. Is he's putting up all of these numbers, and he's currently averaging 24 points on the season, mm-hmm. and this is without, in my opinion, him getting adequate foul calls. Because you guys were talking about, you know, him getting to the lane, kind of finishing. I think he's getting fouled a lot of times, like especially in that Memphis and then the Milwaukee game. I think he was getting fouled quite a lot. And they just weren't calling again. I mean, that's to be expected. He hasn't had the superstar whistle just yet. But what I want to illustrate is he's putting up these numbers on 3.5 free throws attempts a game. And for reference, Devin Booker is giving you 6.7 free throws attempts per game. And I'm not saying he's going to, you know, go from 3.5 to almost 7 overnight. But if he can start getting, you know, getting the respect of the whistle, respect from the refs to start getting those whistles, I mean, 24 points per game, man, he could – in his second season in the NBA, man, like it's insane. So like Andrew said, we saw a superstar in the making that game. I did want to highlight one thing before we moved off of that Grizzlies game. I thought that the reason we lost is because John Morant almost shot 50 on us. He had 49, and it was, I mean, in my opinion, it was a very easy 49. And I think the problem there is, one, like I said, Steven Nash was setting some very hard, sometimes illegal screens, but we don't know how to navigate screens. And that's something that I think we saw in the Hawks game, the Grizzlies game, the Bucks game. Like, anytime a big who can set an actual firm screen, our guards get lost. Jalen's getting lost. KPJ's getting lost. I think KPJ was actually pretty bad at navigating the screens those couple games. And so that's one thing I think I want to see Silas kind of work with the team on, is when somebody is setting a really hard, firm screen, like, you got to find a way to either fight through it, or, I don't know, the biggest step up. We have to figure out how we're going to navigate these screens. So we don't have John Morant dropping 49 on us, just getting downhill the whole time. So
weren't they playing drop most of that game? And when John
playing drop this whole time, yeah.
And if he's making the threes, you're just dead. I mean, because, you know, Şengün has to play drop against him, because he has no chance of, you know, Ja's going to go right by him. But if then he's, you know, he's able to, you can't.
He's like 5 or 5 from three that game.
Yeah.
If John Morant is hitting threes, it's over. Like, there's nothing you can do. How do you stop that guy? So,
you can't. Yeah. So you just move on.
Yeah, it's whatever. And I think we'll take Andrew's advice. We'll go on to the next topic. The next night, the very next night, we played Milwaukee, and they punched us in the mouth from like the jump. Like, I think we were down by like 10, 13 points in the first two.
It was like 13-0, man.
Yeah, it was bad. So we lost that game before it even started. I mean, but when we were playing a legit title contender coming off of a back to back, I think we flew to Milwaukee. So I'm not excusing it. Go ahead.
To even, you know, touch on that, they flew to Milwaukee, played a contender. In that game, it went under the radar. They played the youngest lineup in NBA history that game, an average age of 21
in 2 days. The youngest ever, you know, beating out that
Suns. Right, because Gordon didn't play at all.
Yeah, Gordon didn't play. They rolled out KPJ.
We were down Gordon, so.
Yeah, they rolled out KPJ, Jalen Green, KJ Martin. And now my memory is awful. With Jabari Smith and Usman Garuba. Young team playing against a title contender. So that 0-13 start made a lot more sense after I found that stat. But go ahead, continue.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, so we got punched in the mouth that game. That was a pretty ugly game from our young team that had up until that point. We competed with Atlanta, we competed with Memphis. We just got whooped against Milwaukee. But I think one of, if not the biggest reason that we lost is kind of similar to John Morant dropping 49 on us. Giannis had a 40 piece on us as well. And so I kind of want to talk to Andrew about what did he see from Jabari Smith defensively? Because, like, I mean, I'm not expecting Jabari, especially let alone as a rookie, to be able to guard Giannis. But, like, the goal is, the idea is one day that Jabari is going to kind of grow and develop into the mold of the kind of guy that, not necessarily like hold Giannis 0-0, but like he'll be able to, you can throw him on a Giannis and he can kind of contain him. You can throw him on a Kawhi, he can contain Kawhi. You can throw him on a KD, he can contain KD. So what did you see from Jabari against Giannis that night? And then what are things you want to see and kind of improve upon for like the future? And, you know, maybe we see this match at 5 years from now.
Well, I guess the number one thing there I saw would be, I'd hoping Jabari looked at Giannis and said, I want to be as big as him and working on his body. Is that's the number one thing. I mean, right? I mean, Jabari has no chance against Giannis. I mean, not very many people do. No one on the Rocket has any physical chance against Giannis. So, you know, look how he plays, you know, and look what he's done to his body. Try to get better. Try to emulate that over the next 5 years. And then play your game, all right? And play within the team concept, because playing against someone like Giannis, it's not a one-on-one thing. You can't do it one-on-one. So play the team defense and do the best you can. Like, what do they used to say? You got to build a freaking wall against that guy, right? That's the only way to stop him. So yeah, and welcome to the NBA, Rook.
Yeah. I went back and watched that game, and it was hilarious. Giannis shot 17 for 21 from the field. He had 44. He was getting everything he wanted in the paint.
He had like 4 or 5 and 1s. Like,
he wasn't even sweating. He was barely trying to.
There was one play on a fast break. He had the easiest Euro step I've ever seen, and it wasn't a clear Euro step. Like he definitely, you know, navigated through some guys, and he had the easiest dunk I've probably ever seen, and it was crazy. Giannis had fun out there. For Jabari, it was crazy. There was one play that one of Giannis's misses actually. Where Giannis went up and Jabari just went flying. I think he almost hit the cameraman. Like he was flying. So he's got to get his weight up. I think he'll be able to. He's obviously 19 years old. So it was an interesting matchup. Again, very young team against a title contender. That was a rough one. Jabari defensively, once he gets his weight on him, I think he could be a Giannis stopper maybe 3-4 years from now, hopefully.
Well, I'll settle for a Giannis container.
Yeah, there's no Giannis stoppers in the NBA. You're right. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, I mean,
that was the definition of a schedule loss.
Yeah,
so move on to the next one.
Yeah, no, yeah. For sure.
I mean, it's what Andrew said. I just saw that. I think Jabari straight up said in his post game presser that he looked at Jabari. I mean, looked at Giannis's frame, was like, that could be me one day. So I'm glad to see that he's talking about, you know. Matter of fact, I'm gonna try to pull up the quote. Let's be proactive here and pull up the quotes. I know I tweeted about it.
Yeah, you definitely tweeted about it.
Let's be proactive here. Let's actually get the here we go. He said, just knowing that one day my body could look like his, just keep working in the weight room, keep getting stronger, because you see how much of an advantage it is. So he's aware, he knows what he needs to do to take his game to the next level. And like I've been touching on, there's such a thing as stopping or like taking Giannis out the game, but you can contain him. And I think that, you know, 4 or 5 years from now, Jabari Smith is going to be the perfect kind of guy to contain Giannis. So, yeah, it was interesting to see him, his first time guarding this guy. We'll check back in maybe like 4 years from now and see how he's doing then. But I want to talk about, too, before we get off this game, too, this is kind of a segue to the next one, but Garuba had a really good game. I think probably – was that his best game in a Rockets uniform? Like, that probably has to be it, right?
I would say so.
Yeah. That was probably Garuba's best game in a Rockets uniform. I'm going to pull up his stats real quick. He had, just give me one second.
I want to say he had 8 points, 6 rebounds, 3 steals, and 2 assists. Let me know, though. All right, that's off the top.
You might be 100% right. So he had you had it backwards. He had 6 points, 8 rebounds, two assists, 4 steals. Yeah, and he didn't shoot that much, obviously, but he did hit a three. He took 1 3, he made that 1 3. And he had 4 offensive rebounds. So what I saw from him that day, I just saw somebody who was looked like he was one happy to be playing. He was active, energetic. He didn't give up on plays when him and Jabari were on the floor together. I mean, we saw a glimpse of what that defensive kind of front court could be if we decided to go in that direction one day. And so I was really happy to see him just get out there. What's up?
No, I was just gonna say, we saw him do what he did in EuroBasket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think I had some questions. I think probably other people did. Can he do it in the NBA? Well, he did it against a contender. So that, I think,
really encouraging.
Garuba may be the most positive thing to come out of that game.
No, he was 100%.
But he really showed me something in the time he's been getting here in the last couple of days. So I'm really happy to see it from him. And then translating that EuroBasket performance here in with the Rockets. I mean, that's really exciting to see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think, like you said, Garuba's game was definitely the biggest highlight. And then Tari shot 3 or 4 from distance that night. So those are the two key things for me that I like to see from that game. But yeah, Garuba looked like he took full advantage of his opportunity in the starting lineup that day. With Shingun, because Shingun did not play that night. I guess he got hurt. That was a sickness.
It was Bruno was out, and Garuba. Shingun, I'm sorry.
Bruno was out with the injury. And Garuba took his spot in the starting lineup and took full advantage of it. So, mm-hmm. It's gonna be interesting to see. I mean, we kind of segue into it with the game yesterday, where. Before Usman checked into the game, Boban checked in before him. So, Andrew, I think you said you had an explanation for that, or you want to talk about that? So I'll let you take the floor.
Well, I know people got really worked up about it, but I thought I wondered about it at the time. Then I looked at it and I think it's pretty clear. I think it was pure matchup because Boban checked in when Walker Kessler checked in, and Kessler is massive. So I think Silas just wanted size on Kessler. And you notice Kessler only played 5 minutes. Boban only played 5 minutes. He only played when Kessler played. So
I didn't know that.
It was purely a matchup thing.
Huh. I did not know Kessler.
Yeah, Kessler, looking at it, Kessler may have played one more run out there. He had 8 minutes to Boban's 3.5.
Okay.
I want to say, Andrew, that was my exact point, though. You know, Boban was purely matchup. And I want to say, after they made the cuts, they said, you know, they like, you know, Boban obviously being around the team, his vibes. And they also were going to play him for situational purposes. And that was a perfect example. As you said, Kessler is a big guy. You're going to play a 7'4 guy against a 7'1 guy or a 6'8 guy against a 7'1 guy. I guess that was Silas's mindset.
Yeah, that's all I think of. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But then, you know, first play of the game, Boban gets the ball in the paint and he gets the ball taken from him. So I'm like, all right, Boban, we got to go back to the bench to get the vibes back up. But, you know, Usman, I didn't touch on it, but that is why he was a first-round pick. He's looked good in that Milwaukee game. He looked good in the Utah game. The hustle is there. The defense is there. You know, rebounding. Everything you would want from an Usman Garuba. He's having, you know, A-plus Usman Garuba games. On the Usman Garuba scale, that's how you expect him to play. So that's good to see from him.
Yeah. Go ahead, Andrew.
Do you think Garuba might take Bruno's starting spot?
That is a good question. And I guarantee you Silas will probably still leave Bruno out there just because he had that really good first game. And they'll see what happens. But it's going to be hard to remove Usman from the rotation after those last two games. And he is a first-round draft pick. And you don't just want to waste those. And I feel like, again, I've said this before in the podcast, this is kind of the last year, in my opinion, Usman can prove himself because the Rockets need to start winning games next year. So Usman's got to, you know, prove that he's a part of this team for the future. And if not, you know, this team, maybe another team. So he's made the most of his opportunity in these last two games. So we'll see what they do. What do you think, Andrew?
I think he's got to keep it up longer, but I think the possibility is certainly there for him to take Bruno's spot in the rotation, because obviously they do have more invested in Garuba than Bruno, but not after just a few games, you know, but he's got to keep it up.
I agree. Yeah.
So I wanted to touch on the Boban thing real quick. I wasn't aware. That's what it was. So y'all kind of helped me explain the Boban first half minutes. That was kind of weird to me. It was situational matchups, I don't think I want to see Boban ever play legit rotation minutes ever again. I think if there was ever any question of is Bruno a legit rotation piece, I think that got answered in preseason. He's someone who is here for marketing purposes. He's going to be in the commercials. They're going to put him on every billboard or, you know, you went to the game, Andrew, so he's on all the promotional content. They let him run the show at open practice. Like, they're going to keep him around because he's such a lovable, marketable guy. He don't need to play no more, bro. he's not an NBA player. He's here because he's extremely marketable. He's a good locker room presence. And we should leave it that way. And then, you know, the last thing that I saw from that game too, it was kind of shocking. I think we should also highlight real quick is the first half of that game. We saw the traditional of KPJ and Jalen. They played, you know, all their minutes were together. The second half, they were staggered. So we saw KPJ check in for Jalen, Jalen check in for KPJ. What did you think about that, Andrew? And which of those two approaches do you think the Rockets should kind of lean into going forward?
I'm kind of more of the let them play together more, because I think if they're going to be the backcourt of the future, they really need to work on their coordination, their chemistry together. If we're trying to win games, staggering is probably this year is probably the better thing, because, you know, the backup point guard position is pretty weak. But as we'll probably talk about later, I'm not too concerned about winning games this year. So I'm okay with leaning more towards playing them together and really driving their chemistry as a pair, backcourt pair on the court.
I'll say this when it comes to staggering. If I cough, I apologize. I'm a little sick. But it looks like they didn't stagger until Sengun was out of the lineup. Those first two games, they're letting Alper Sengun go out there and play make. And then as soon as he's out of the rotation, that's when Salas started to stagger those guys. So allergies acting up, so I'll pass it to Will. But I do want to see them even stagger. My eyes water and everything. Even when Sengun plays, I want to see them staggered. So I hope that's what they go to.
Yeah, I think Brad told what I was going to say. I think that they, because they Silas doesn't usually stagger them. I think that the decision to stagger them was because Alperen Sengun was light in the lineup and we didn't have anything on the second units as far as like shot creation and playmaking goes. So I think that's why we saw them get staggered. But I've been someone who's been asking for them to be staggered since we drafted Jalen Green. Like, I thought that they should have been staggered first preseason game last season. And I still feel that way, obviously. I think that it looked really good when we staggered them. I get where you're coming from, Andrew, about not being too concerned about wins necessarily and kind of collecting as much data on the KPJ and Jalen Green pairing together. But I do think that, you know, next season when it's time to start winning games, all the teams that have dynamic elite backcourts, they stagger them. Like DeJounte and Trae Young, that's part of the reason they were able to beat us, is because at all times, one of those two elite guards were on the floor. When Darius Garland was healthy, they did the same thing with Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland. And us Rockets fans, we know a lot about that because that's what James Harden and Chris Paul did. It's what James Harden and Russell Westbrook did. So I like the stagger. And if not this season, I definitely want to see it next season when it's time to start winning games, because I think that that's going to be the best way to maintain that at all times we have elite guard play on the floor. But anybody else want to talk about that game, specifically the Boban, the stagger, anything like that? Because there's nothing that happened that game we need to talk about.
Really quickly, what are the next few topics?
We have – so from that game, we're going to talk about Jalen and Jabari's, that little argument. Mm-hmm. Just Christopher not getting any minutes, that's kind of a quick one. Has Jabari and Tari so far exceeded or met expectations? And then, of course, the big one, which is KPJ at the point guard position. So,
yeah. So really quick, I'll touch on, you know, Deshaun Nix, terrible preseason, but I will give him props. Yeah, terrible preseason. He looked good in that last game. He was composed, played a lot of minutes. He wasn't goofy out there. He played like a real point guard. That's what I like to see. He had a nice reverse layup. that was kind of similar to the one he had in Milwaukee, and Craig touched on it, you know, during the broadcast. So I give credit where credit's due. You know, we were all critical of Dacian Nix, but he did play solid in that last game. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. So I kind of segued it earlier. The biggest talking point from that game probably was the late timeout where Jalen and Jabbar kind of got into some sort of, you know, yelling match. I don't want to say that they had to be restrained from each other, because I feel like that's kind of overselling it, but teammates did kind of step in between them and kind of like, you know, you go over, you go over there. But there was a argument that I think social media has kind of took and ran with. And I know we talked off camera about this, Andrew. We kind of feel the same way about it. So what did you see? What are your thoughts on that that argument?
I went back and watched to see where I could find out what was leading up to it. And it was, the play was, about a minute left in the game. And just before that happened, they came out of a timeout and Silas, a sideline out of bounds play. And they ran it, pass it into to Jalen out near midcourt. And you had, pass it into KPJ. Mm-hmm. Jalen came up the lane looking for a screen. Jabari was supposed to screen his man so Jalen could get the ball clean at the, you know, up at midcourt. And Jabari totally whiffed the screen. And the play got blown up because I think whoever the defender was face guarding
Jordan Clarkson.
Yeah. Clark, he couldn't get the ball. And so KPJ had to make something up and wound up in a turnover. And you could see when on the replay, Jalen was like this to Jabari. Like, what? That was a terrible screen. So I'm pretty sure that was what the discussion afterwards. He probably came back to the bench like, what the hell was that, man?
Yeah.
I'm sure it's forgotten. It's moved on, and it's no big deal.
Yeah. If Andrew didn't touch on that, I was going to give that exact play-by-play scenario. So great job, Andrew. So that's exactly what happened. And you have two competitors in a closed game. You know, young team is 0-3. They just want to go out there and get the win. So, you know, sometimes that's what happens. You know, tempers can get the best of some people. But it's just, they're just competing at the end of the day. There's nothing. People are trying to force it and say, oh, there's tension in the Rockets locker room. Like, no. It's nothing to do with that. I don't want anyone to think the most out of that situation. It's extremely minor. One thing that was funny though, Eric Gordon was just watching that happen. He's the oldest guy. He's the oldest guy on the team. He was like, "Look, this has nothing to do with me.
Not my problem.
Yet another classic Eric Gordon meme.
Yes, it is.
He has to be the most meme Houston Rocket of all time. There's probably by far, like, it's probably no one even close.
This is why we can't trade him.
Yeah, you got to keep him for that purpose alone. But
so that was that's the memorable part of that, Eric Gordon's reaction.
I will say another thing that stood out to me was, you know, KPJ was holding Jabari's arm and Jabari like shook him loose. And then KPJ stood up and was like, hey, relax, calm it down. I want to say Will maybe touched on that in the post-game spaces. But that's, you know, hey, it's the signs of being a leader to a sense. Like, okay, you got to get over here, because if Eric Gordon's going to sit on the bench, someone's got to do something. So that was good to see. So
Kevin Porter Jr. is the level-headed, non-emotional.
Insane, right? Team.
Exactly.
Hey, that's insane.
That's progress.
That is progress. But, oh, one more thing I did want to say. Jalen Green, there's a video of him. I know it's high school, but there's a video of him in high school where he's getting on guys on the bench like, hey, y'all got to, you know, do this, play defense. This is awful. Like, he's really getting on his guys. Very animated. It's the kind of guy Jalen Green is. We probably weren't going to see it his rookie year. Now you have a confident Jalen Green. Feels better about himself. If he's frustrated, he's going to probably let that show, as he did in the play Andrew discussed and when he got to the bench. So I actually like to see that from Jalen. I tweeted about it in the offseason. I want to see this Jalen Green this year. And I saw it four games into the season. Role. Yeah, and I love that. You have a young team. Someone has to step into their role, whether it's Kevin, Jalen, or both of them. And I like to see both of them take that role on.
Yep.
I think you kind of touched on one thing I was going to say. I don't know if I said this on the podcast. I know I've said it in spaces on the TL, but I've always thought that, like, Eric Gordon is more of a lead by example, not by voice kind of guy. And I think nothing epitomizes what that meant more than that incident. Because, and I say incident, I feel like that's the wrong word to use, but that timeout where that happened, nothing more exemplified Eric Gordon being a lead by example, not by voice kind of guy. And I think this locker room needs a more lead by voice. I mean, obviously I think the lead by example is definitely important, but I think they also need a lead by by voice kind of guy, somebody kind of in that Udonis Haslam kind of mold who's going to pull you to the side when you're tripping. So it was kind of funny that, like you said, Brad, Eric Gordon could not care any more or any less that his, you know, the two top three picks were arguing with each other. That was hilarious. But I do have the quotes that these guys had. They obviously were asked about the discussion, the heated. What was the word they used last year? A spirited debate. Is that what they called it?
I like that.
The spirited debate, right? They asked him about the spirited debate in both their post game pressers. And Jabari says, "We were just competing, ironing some things out with what coach we were going to be in, and that was it." Then Jalen says, "It was nothing. It's going to happen. Heat of the moment. All that matters is that we got out there and finished the game." And so to me, that's what it was. I just saw two teammates who are both, and this is part of their career, they're winners. These guys, they're not used to losing. They're used to winning and winning games. This is a close game that they could win. And, you know, like Andrew kind of touched on, there were some things that they saw that maybe could have been a little bit improved upon to help ensure the win. And when you're in the heat of battle, you're competitive. These guys are two competitors. You're going to butt heads. I mean, like, I've never played at the NBA level, right? But we've all been to your local rec before, pick up basketball, and saw something that we didn't like. And, you know, otherwise, someone who was probably your best friend, you were now arguing with them about a play in basketball. That happens all the time. So, like, that's something I want to point out is, like, I think people will be surprised how often teammates argue with each other on the bench. Like, these guys, it's not always peaches and sunshine and everybody's getting along. Like, when you're going to the heat of battle with these guys, it's going to happen. And I think a lot of times you see it more so happen like practices and in like the locker room, but these guys argue, they get into it. And I'm not saying that I enjoyed watching them argue. I'm glad that it was definitely, like I said, nothing. And these guys, they were just competitive. And I think they both kind of seemed to already put it behind them, but it is encouraging to know that these guys care about winning. Like, they're not out there just lollygagging. If I was somebody who didn't care, I wouldn't argue. Me and my teammate would not be arguing. If I didn't care about winning this game, okay. Like, all right, I'll set a better screen next time, bro. My fault. And we just keep it pushing. But, like, they both obviously cared enough about the game to even have that argument in the first place. And we're talking about a team that last season kind of struggled from effort at times, right? So we know now, like, our two franchise cornerstones, the guys, our two top three picks, like, they argue with each other. And not like they have issues, but like they both care enough to argue with each other about the game. And so, like I said, I don't think this is a good problem. I don't know. Let's say next week we see another argument, we can start having a discussion. But I think it's something to worry about. If you're a Rockets fan on the fence about that incident, please don't be. We've seen it happen plenty of times with teams that have won championships before. But I still want to say something, Andrew.
Yeah, you made me think about it. You know, there was a point couple of years ago in the prior era of Rockets, we were complaining about lack of accountability for players and for star players. Well, I think we're seeing that was an incident of, you know, they care so much, they're going to be holding each other accountable. We should all be 100% happy about those guys pushing each other and holding each other accountable to execute. That's great.
I agree.
I completely agree. So some quick hitters before we go into the last big discussion and then we wrap it. Josh Christopher is not getting minutes. I think he's played around like 4 minutes a game this season. I'll look it up real quick to fact check it. But he's not really playing so much, and it's been kind of reported that he's not going to be in the rotation this much this season. I think part of the reason he's even been in the rotation is because we've had some injuries to guys like Jayshon Tate. And Eric Gordon's been kind of in and out, but yeah, he's averaging 9 minutes per game in these four games so far. So, Andrew, what are your thoughts on Josh Christopher being out of the rotation? Why do you think that is, and how does that make you feel that this guy's out the rotation?
Well, I'm concerned for him, but we all were eagerly anticipating him in Vegas Summer League, and then we were all, oh my God, that was bad. And it didn't get a whole lot better in preseason. So, I mean, we don't see practice, but, you know, from what we've seen with Christopher on the court, he certainly hasn't gotten better than last year. I'm not even, he may have regressed. So, you know, it's not great. I wish he had gotten improved on. Maybe he's not taken to heart the plan and the guidance from the team, like, hey, we need you to do X, Y, and Z, and they're not doing it. Maybe that's why he's not in the rotation at this point. But it's really disappointing to see. Hopefully he snaps out of it and works his way back.
Yeah, I wanted to get some more context on the situation on why maybe he isn't playing as much. And I went and looked at some, advanced stats at, every single lineup that Josh has played in. He's played in five different lineups, and all of them were, the Rockets had an awful net rating in every single one, except for one, but there was only two possessions played with that specific lineup. So pretty much every time he's out there on the floor, the Rockets are getting blown out the water. I'd have to go back and watch the games, but I didn't know if it was just strictly, his fault. But as Andrew said, I feel like he hasn't really gotten better. He touched on it in media day. He said that he wanted to go out there and slow the game down for himself, and that would prevent him from, moving too fast, making mistakes. And that's something he really needs to do to excel at the NBA level. But it is interesting to see him go out there and play 4 minutes a night while Garrison is playing all these minutes. And it does make sense only if you want to use Garrison as a floor spacer. But Garrison has been shooting terribly this year. So if Garrison keeps that up, and we know Garrison doesn't play defense, I'd rather see Josh out there. But it's interesting to see Josh not play a lot of minutes. But the lineups he's played in, just for context, they've all done extremely awful. But shout out to that dunk he had against Atlanta. Best dunk I've ever seen live. Best dunk I've ever seen live. But yeah, that's all I got to say.
I think Andrew kind of stole what I was going to say. It was the case of coming into Summer League. Like, that was somebody who I said I thought was too good to even be in Summer League. And then he came out there and he really wasn't that. Like, he was making, I think, poor decisions. Looks like he was trying to do like a really awful impression of like James Harden. It wasn't good. But I kind of wrote it off as like, well, that's his summer league. Like, he was by definition the best player on that roster. He was like the only guy who had like legit NBA experience under his belt on that team. So I was like, okay, maybe like he was, feeling himself. He wanted to kind of go out of his comfort zone and go out of his role, because like, this is summer league. It was going to be his time to shine, right? Like, maybe that's what that was. The preseason came around and it was kind of the same thing. It was still like, all right, Josh, I'm not really seeing the leap that I want to see from you. I'm seeing you kind of make some poor decisions. It's just not where I thought he was going to be. And so, like you said, maybe it's a combination of summer league, preseason, the practices. Maybe he hasn't been, doing the things that the coaching staff has been asking him to do, or, he's not progressing at the rate they want to see him progress at for him to go out there and play. And then, now that Brad's let us know that, like, statistically speaking, he's making the team, or I'm going to say he's making the team worse, but when he's out there, we're not playing to the best of our abilities. My only one pushback is I do want to know, what is the reason? Like, is it because he's not doing something in practice? Like, what is the reason Josh Christopher is not playing? Because if it was just if you play good in your minutes and you play good in practice, you get minutes. If you don't play good in your minutes, you don't play. I don't think Garrison Matthews should be playing because Garrison Matthews is not doing it. He's doing nothing right now. He's he's not playing defense. He's a guy who last season was, I think he kind of tricked me. I thought he was a pretty good defender when he first came out there. He's not a good defender. He just plays hard. So he's not really playing defense. And his one asset is that he's supposed to be a floor spacer. And I don't have it pulled up, but
he's 2 for 10 this year.
And that's just regular season. I bet you if you factored in preseason, it's even worse. Like,
if you factor in preseason, he's 4 for 24.
If that's your one job is to shoot threes and you're 4 of 24, like, it's bad. I'm concerned about Garrison Matthews, one, just playing in general, but like, if we're saying he's playing better than Josh, how bad is Josh playing? Because I think I would rather see Josh Christopher, even though he may not necessarily fit the same way Garrison Matthews does, because Garrison Matthews is kind of more of a wing and Josh is more of a guard. I think I'd still rather just see Josh go out there and play a small ball three, or like, maybe slide KBJ to the three and, have those guys kind of play each other that way, than to see Garrison Matthews. But like I said, I just want to know what the reason is. Why is Josh not playing? Because it is kind of weird to me that he's out the rotation, but somebody like Garrison Matthews, who I think has been a net negative, is playing. So Anybody else have anything to say about Garrison Matthews or Josh Christopher before we move on to the next topic?
I think the less said about Gary Bird, the better.
We call him Gary Bird.
Nah, that's Garrison. They ain't Gary Bird no more. That's Garrison.
But I agree with Andrew. We can go to the next topic.
Yeah. The last couple topic is, has, you know, the rookies who have played, because we haven't seen Ty Washington play. I guess he's hurt right now, which is kind of interesting. But Ty hasn't played. I think even if he was healthy, he probably wasn't going to play that much anyways. But the two guys who have been in the rotation from this draft class is Jabari Smith and Tari Eason. So through four games going on five, what are your thoughts, Andrew, on those guys? Have they lived up to your expectations for them? Have they not? Have they exceeded them? Like, what are your thoughts on these guys four games into the season?
I love them. They right now they're everything that we thought and hoped they were going to be. And with Tari, I was all in, like everybody else on Rockets Twitter, to draft Tari Eason.
We kind of manifested him, right? Like, we've been talking about that for a while.
Right? It was for months, and we, you know, we got that one right. And he's better than I think almost all of us thought he was going to be. Keep it up. Keep going. I got no notes, no negatives about for either of those guys. It's been everything you've been hoped for. Now, maybe Jabari, you know, start shooting a little bit better, you know, elite shooter, really, you know, I'd like to see him hit one of those, you know, 7-for-10 3-point games sometime soon. All right. But beyond that, I'm not worried about that, but beyond that, it's all great. You know, get Tari more time, but I'm not sure, you know, where that's going to come from, but you know, he's excelling.
Yeah. And I'll touch on Tari really quickly. He's that guy that's going to go out there, get rebounds, hustle, finish in the paint. And he wasn't advertised as a guy that can hit threes, but he's been hitting threes as he did in the preseason. So Tari has exceeded my expectations. And, you know, Will has touched on it on Twitter. You know, he figured that Tari was one of the best rebounders, rebounding forwards in the league. And Will, I actually do have that stat on the side if you want to pull that up for me. But Tari has been rebounding at a historic rate for guys who barely play. Pretty ESPN stat here. But, yeah, like, if you just read it out, like, he's really getting rebounds at a high rate, something that's not really done that often by a forward. So Tari, he needs more minutes. That's what I'm saying when I pull this set up. I love everything I've seen from him, and he just has to keep it up, and he will keep it up. You know, as for Jabari Smith Jr., and you can take that graphic down, Will. As for Jabari, he has been just pulling threes. No hesitation. Maybe on a few plays, but for the most part, no hesitation. He's just out there shooting. The first three games, he came out there and shot 26 threes, which was the second most all-time in your first three games as a rookie. Only Trae Young had more with 28. So that's crazy to see, but I love it. It's a 6'11 guy we're talking about out here shooting threes like that, and he's a shooter. Like, he can make those. He's been off, but when the shot starts to fall, as we saw against the Utah Jazz, he only took 5 attempts, but he hit 3 of them. He's a good shooter, and teams are actually leaving him open for some reason, and he shot 57.1% on uncontested threes at Auburn. So we'll see how much longer NBA defenses want to leave him open, because he is going to start knocking those down. So I like the confidence that Jabari has displayed in his first game at center. He had 3 blocks. Jabari is a very versatile player. You know, we know he could play on the perimeter, but for him to go down in the paint and get 3 blocks, something that he was, you know, very underrated at in college. He was a good paint defender in college as well. But for him to do it at the NBA level in his first game at center, That's remarkable to me. And this is like a new prototype kind of guy. You know, Salas said in media day, we haven't seen a guy like this before. It wasn't media day, but it was after they drafted him. He's like, I don't have a comparison for Jabari. There's no comparison for a guy like that. And we're going into game 5, you know, for Wednesday. I can't wait to see how he surprises us every single night. I think both of these guys have exceeded my expectations, even if Jabari has been shooting that poorly. I just love the confidence from him. And when the shot starts falling, it's going to be scary.
Yeah. I think, like y'all said, I think they've I think Tari is for sure exceeding my expectations. I think he's a lot better than what I thought he was going to be starting out. I thought it was going to be somebody who maybe spent some time in the G League, maybe, you know, was kind of in, like how Josh Christopher was last season, where he wasn't really a part of the rotation until he kind of just forced his way into it. Tari Eason is like, he's just straight up a part of the rotation. And he's been, I think he's done, out of everybody on the team, I think he's done the most with his limited minutes than anybody else has. Like I think Tari Eason has been phenomenal. And I think he's getting around, let me say it so I'm correct, he's getting 18 minutes a night. I think he's done the most with 18 minutes a night than anybody else is on this team. Like I said, that there was the game against the Bucks where he shot 3 or 4 from three. And I'm actually going to try to pull up the stat on it because he's actually shooting. Here we go. I went back and wrote down what he's shooting from distance, including preseason. So we can get a little bit of a bigger sample size. He shot 1 of 2 his first game preseason, 2 of 4 second game preseason, 1 of 3 third game, 1 of 2 in the so that's the last game of preseason. He didn't take any threes in the season opener, and then I'm all over the place. But 3 or 4 3-point. Then he had what was he yesterday? I don't think did he take a three yesterday?
Well, he's 4 for 8 for the entire regular season.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, so actually, no, he didn't. But he's shooting a lot better than I initially thought. I know it's still on a small sample size, but he's still shooting a lot better than what I thought he was going to be shooting when he first came in. And then Brad kind of touched on the biggest thing for me. The dude is, like I've been saying it, man, he might be the best rebounding wing in the entire NBA. He's for sure, like, he has to be the best rebounder at his age in the entire NBA. Well, at least for the rest rebounding, we get his age at the entire NBA, right? So not accounting for percentage, but like small forwards, power forwards. I think he has to be the best one at 21 years old. And then when you start looking at like the guys who lead the NBA in rebounds, I mean, that's guys like it's positions like Siakam, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. Those guys are giving you like 7, 8, 9 rebounds a game. And Tari Eason is currently averaging 6.3 rebounds, and this is off the bench in 18 minutes. Those guys are getting 30 plus minutes a night, you know, putting up 9. So he's putting up pretty much their numbers in less than time. And like this number is actually kind of skewed because against Milwaukee, he only had 2. But other than that, he had 9 against Utah, he had 7 against Memphis, 7 against Atlanta. In preseason, he gave us 9 rebounds per game, and summer league, he gave us 10.4 rebounds per game. He's been able to rebound the ball at every level that he's played at so far. So if he keeps this up, which I'm hoping he will, and as his role continues to grow, we're going to have that discussion about him being the best rebounding wing in the NBA. Because I think if he's not already there, he's in that conversation already. So, yeah, Tari Eason definitely surprised me. Jabari has actually lived with my expectations. I thought that he was going to kind of come out a little slower. As a matter of fact, like he kind of shocked me against the Spurs in that preseason game where he came out like Kevin Durant. Like I was kind of shocked that he looked that good to start. I thought he was going to kind of start a little bit slower. And I don't want to say slow as in like he's been bad. Like he hasn't been bad or nothing. But like Brad said, like some of the jump shots aren't falling. There's a lot of times where he's hesitating on open threes. There was a mean – I see you were at the game yesterday, Andrew.
At the Grizzlies game.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you were at the game against Utah. I was at the game against Utah as well. And KBJ had a mean, like, accidental sham guy, split 2 defenders and gave it to Jabari in the corner, right in the shooting pocket. He kind of hesitated. And I'm like, no, shoot the ball. That's a SportsCenter highlight right there. If you just shot it and if you made it, that was like ESPN number one. So, like, he's still hesitating on some good looks. But, like, that's kind of what I expected, right? Like, I kind of expected him to kind of come out and have some first game rookie jitters. His game is kind of predicated on him knocking – offensive game is kind of predicated on him knocking down jumpers. And so I kind of figured that, you know, he was probably going to struggle a little bit when the season first started, you know, because, you know, shooters need to catch their groove, need to catch their rhythm. And, you know, the season progresses, we're going to start seeing that kind of pick up. So I'm not – he's been about as good as I wanted him to be or as I expected him to be. I think one thing that people on Twitter, at least from the reactions I have, I kind of wonder how much they want Jabari to shoot the ball because I see people, like, asking for him to shoot more. And outside of yesterday, he shot 17 against the Hawks, 14 shots against the Grizzlies, 15 against the Bucks, and then he had 10 against the Jazz, which I think yesterday he definitely should shot the ball more. But I think that was more a product of him hesitating more than anything. But like that's kind of in line with what I expected him to shoot. I didn't think he was going to come out shooting 20 shots a game. That was going to give us more like 13, 14, 15 in that ballpark. So
yeah, Jabari's
been that's bright words. He's been for the most part like who I thought he was going to be coming into the NBA. I'm happy. I'm like you said. These guys have been what we needed so far. So, Any more thoughts on that before we subway into like the last kind of big topic of discussion before we kind of come to a close here?
Well, just last thing, I'm just hoping to see get Ty Ty on the court and see what he can do.
Yeah.
Speaking of point guards.
Yeah, I do want to see Ty Ty out there when he's healthy again. Deshaun X, I'd rather see Ty Ty. But as for Jabari, last thing I'll say, he has come out there. He's made 11 threes in his first four games and has 7 blocks, which is funny. He's the only player in NBA history to do that in his first four games. So it's kind of touch on how versatile he is as a player. So he's been very interesting for me so far. Or impressive to me, not interesting. He's been very impressive to me. But, yeah, that's all I got to say.
Yeah. And then the last thing, we say the best one for last. The biggest, most polarizing discussion, honestly, probably last season. It's going to be the most polarizing discussion for sure this season. We've already discussed it a lot more than I thought we would through four games. Is Kevin Porter Jr. a point guard? So I'm just going to leave it at that, Andrew. Is Kevin Porter Jr. a point guard? And what is your take on that?
Why do I feel you just threw your James Harden dribbling at the top of the key until there's 1 second left in the shot clock and you're throwing a bomb over there to go do something and beat the clock? I don't know is the serious answer. He's certainly not a traditional point guard, but there's no the only traditional point guard in the NBA anymore is Chris Paul. And when he retires, there won't be traditional point guards among the top NBA players. He's a guard, a lead guard, maybe. Is he a true point guard? No, I'm not sure that he needs to be a true point guard. The question for me is, can he get better at being a offensive engine who can make his teammates better for over the rest of the year? That's the challenge for him. You see him doing it in spurts. He'll make the right reads, make the right pass. And then you'll see him, totally miss an open player and concentrate on getting his shot. So there's good and bad with KPJ as your primary, as your point guard. For me, I want to see him get better at it over the year, but he's never going to be your pass first, set up and run a system guy. I just don't think that's the kind of player he is. And I think that's okay if that's how the offense evolves. I'm more concerned about how well he does the role he's defined than being a traditional point guard.
And I'll say this about the topic, and I'll keep it, short and concise. Kevin, he hasn't even played, a full two seasons of games in his career yet, and he just took on the point guard role last year. He got better as the season went on, so I figure he'll get better as the season goes on, while he gels with his new teammates. So I have no issue with Kevin at point guard, especially right now. The fan base was getting really upset with him in that last game. Other decisions that he can make, passing wise, that he's maybe missed a few times. Yeah, sure. But I think Kevin is getting better as a playmaker. And as Andrew said, and as anybody should say, he will never be a fast pass first player. He's a get a bucket guy, facilitate second. And he's averaging 5.5 assists. And, while I'm on the topic of 5.5 assists, he's averaging 25-5, which is only being done by 11 players in the NBA right now. That goes with 9 All-Stars and Terry Rozier. So KPJ is playing good ball. I know I didn't want to even say Terry's name, but I had to. He's a good player. But KPJ he's playing a lot better than you would think if you scroll down your Twitter and people are like, man, like, I've never been more sure that we need another point guard. Shout out to Nathan Fox. Sorry, I just said a tweet out there. But there's a lot of people that think that. And I feel like Kevin is developing as a point guard, and he's not even playing that bad to the point where people need to be dogging him like this. He's playing, a good brand of basketball, shooting lights out, and facilitating hasn't been that bad, in my opinion. It'll get better as the season progresses. That's how I feel about Kevin at point guard. He could be a point guard. We don't know. He's barely played that many games, so we'll have to see. But go ahead, Will. I know you have a lot to say on this topic.
No, I'll try to keep it concise, but I think that I think that the play that even sparked the conversation, because the conversation about KPJ playing point guard was kind of prevalent through the first three games, but it was never more prevalent after that fourth game. Like, that was when it's like the floodgates opened. Everybody was like, we're sure he's not a point guard no more. I think the play that kind of opened those floodgates was the play around, I think it was like the 50 second mark in the fourth quarter, where Jalen Green had Kelly Olynyk switched onto him, and KB decided to ISO over Mike Conley. And, you know, he did ultimately miss the shot, which I think if KB makes that shot, we don't even have this discussion at all. But he misses the shot. And I wouldn't say Jalen was upset, but you can tell Jalen thought he was going to get the ball that possession, and he didn't. And so I think that was like, you know, there was a stark mismatch there that KBJ didn't either recognize or chose to ignore. And we took a shot that, like, I think for KBJ, isolation step back threes, that's what he took. Like, those are shots that he takes and makes pretty consistently, or at least so far this season, he has. So, like, I'm not mad at the shot. I'm more so mad that there might have been a better shot if he swung the ball to Jalen. But to me, like, learning those things, one, I don't think he's doing anything that coach isn't asking him to do. So let me make that very clear. I don't think coach would be mad at KBJ for taking that shot or anything, any decision that KBJ's made so far. I think he's doing exactly what Silas is asking him to do. But secondly, I'm not concerned about stuff like that, because I think that's going to come, as he, like Brad says, he's played 141 games total in his NBA career, which is not even enough for two NBA seasons. And of that, maybe like half of those were at a point guard position last season. And so he's still a really young player who doesn't have as much NBA experience as like a fourth year player, what you would think he should. And he's still learning the position itself. I'm not really concerned with stuff like that. Like, there's been people talking about he's missing Jabari in the corners, which I think that's one thing he definitely needs to improve on, is finding the shooters in the corner. But like, to me, that's something that that's something he can work on. That's not like a super duper hard fix for me. I think that's something that he can improve upon as a player. I think a lot of that is also just a product of it being game four of 82 of a new season with a new team, and he's not necessarily used to playing with Jabari yet. And like, that's something I think we're going to see them kind of develop their chemistry and kind of get down pack as the season progresses. Is he's going to start being able to find Jabari more in his sweet spots, and he's going to start finding those shooters in the corners a lot more. So I'm not really concerned about that. What was concerning me about KPJ was the finishing around the rim and the defense. I think his defense was pretty lackluster in those first games, especially against when he was switched on to like Trae Young and John Morant. I think he did a pretty bad job guarding those quicker guards. And then he was not finishing well last season, and then this season he wasn't finishing well. But against the Jazz, I know it's the weaker team. I mean, I guess record-wise, they were better than teams we played so far, but like, they were probably a weaker team than the Bucks. He played pretty good defense, in my opinion, and he was finishing around the rim a lot better. So he's even improving in the areas that I was concerned about. So I'm not too concerned about that. We had a really good space today that you know, from our good friend J-Dub. If you don't follow him, you should go check out the space. It was recorded, but you should definitely go listen to it. We had a pretty good discussion about KPJ playing the point guard position. I think the general consensus that we reached when that space concluded was that if you separate the word point guard from primary playmaker, I think we're all saying the same thing, no matter where you lie on the KPJ spectrum. Is KPJ a point guard? I think so. Is he a primary playmaker? Probably not. Like, he's probably more of a secondary kind of guy. And who knows, maybe Jalen's the primary, maybe it's Şengün, maybe we draft that guy this year, maybe we trade for that, or we sign that guy for ages, like, who knows. But is it KPJ? Probably not. And I think that, I mean, like, Andrew, is that valid in your opinion? Like, would you say that, do you think KPJ is a primary playmaker, or is he probably more of a secondary in your opinion?
For a championship team?
Yeah.
Today? No, he's not. He's not that good yet, but yeah. I'm not
or,
willing to
– Or could you project that he would be a primary? Because I still think the answer is no.
Yeah, are you asking, is he going to become a top 10 player in the NBA?
That's kind of what it comes
probably
down
not.
To, right?
Probably not.
And but okay. I think everybody, no matter where you lie, you would probably agree with that sentence. So it's like, I think that he can play point guard. We should have to find someone who can be the primary playmaker. And I think that he's in that role, because if he doesn't, who will? But that's just kind of the hand he's been dealt. I think he's doing what he's asked
to do. He's certainly a rotation player on a very good team. You know, I don't see no issue with that. I know, like that play we were talking about before, I think there was two sides of KPJ. Beginning of the game, he was dominating Mike Conley. Yeah. He had a huge advantage, and he was attacking. I don't know if Silas told him to or if he just realized it and did it, but either way, it was the right thing to do for him to look to score because Mike Conley can't guard him, right? And then he switched Conley off. You notice he switched Conley, they switched Conley off of him after the first quarter. And he did more facilitating. When I went back and watched the fourth quarter, you know, that last shot was not good. It was hero ball, right? At the end. And I get, you know, he shouldn't be doing that. And hopefully in the film session, they're like, no, let's run Wiper or something and look for the mismatch. I'd rather have Jalen versus Olynyk on than you taking that shot. Learning opportunity, but it wasn't great. But like you said, it's game four, and you know, all right, move on. You know, everyone takes bad shots sometimes.
Yeah, and I was gonna have one more thing, Brad. I just think that most people, no matter where you lie on that the KBJ point guard debate, would probably agree. Like even the biggest KBJ truther would probably agree he's probably not a primary. He's probably more of a secondary kind of guy. And I think that he can play the point guard position and be that secondary kind of guy. Like, I think people confuse that playing the point guard means you have to be the primary. When you look at like the teams that have gotten it done, the two teams we just went to the finals, right? The primary playmaker is not a point guard on either of those teams. Marcus Smart's not the primary, Steph Curry's not the primary. It's Jason Tatum and Draymond Green. And those guys play the wing position. So like the idea that's the idea that I push back on is like that your point guard has to be like your floor general, your primary. Cause like, nah, man, like the team that just went to the finals didn't have that. They had Steph Curry. I'm not saying he's gonna be Steph Curry, but Steph Curry's kind of more of the score first. I'm gonna come off this screen and shoot a 30 foot three. And Marcus Smart's more of a, I'm gonna, you know, make my bread and butter on the defensive end. I think that KPJ can line up at the one, but we just need to find somebody else who is going to be the primary. Like I said, maybe that's Jalen. Maybe it's Şengün. Maybe it's the guy we draft this year. I mean, I know there's the Amen Thompsons out there, the Scoot Henderson. Maybe it's one of those guys. Maybe we sign or trade for that guy this offseason. Like, who knows? But I think that no matter where you lie on that debate, you probably would agree with the sentence that he's not a primary. And I think that I got his jersey hanging behind. That's why I put it up actually for this exact discussion. I don't think it's a primary, and that's still my guy. So, yeah, I don't know. Brad, what do you think?
I feel like the Rockets right now are trying to work him into being a primary playmaker. We'll see if he, you know, becomes that in the future. We don't know at the end of the day. You know, he has a lot of growing to do still. As I touched on before, you know, he hasn't played that many NBA career games. But, you know, we'll just have to see what he ends up becoming. You know, the Rockets will be bad again. They'll have a top draft pick. They have some young guys out there. Maybe it is Amen Thompson or Scoot Henderson. And we'll see what they do. But for the time being, I would like to see them, if they ever do start Şengün again, throw him into that, you know, baby Jokic role, and let's see what he did against the Spurs in that first preseason game, you know, in some regular season games. You know, Şengün had a good game. They were literally running through him to start that entire the first few series of that game, I want to say. And he had 13 points and 3 assists, and he looked good, 5 or 6 shooting. And that's how I kind of want to see them run the offense if they're – feeling iffy about Şengün. They feel iffy about KPJ's playmaking. But that's the last thing I would say. Kevin, it's early in the season. I think he'll get better. But I will say he does have to kick it to Jalen if he has Olynyk on him, because KPJ was eating on that Olynyk matchup. So you got to let your brother eat in that situation too.
Yeah. And I mean, if it's one thing I'm not worried about, is Jalen Green. I mean, Kevin Porter Jr. passing to Jalen Green. If it's one thing he knows how to do, it's to get the ball to Jalen. Like he does that quite a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think also did some other pretty good things well that game. I think he was a pretty good defender. He finished around the rim a lot better. He had 10 rebounds that game. So I don't want to hide just the negatives. But we're coming to the end here. Andrew, I got just some quick questions for you as the guest, and we can wrap it. What are you seeing? What do you want to see from part two against the Jazz tomorrow?
Last year, they did very well in the second half of these, you know, home and home games. I think they won almost all of the second halves of those games last year. I don't remember the statistics. So improve on the things they were not so good on against Utah first time around. Off the top of my head, I'm those specifics, but can we see clear changes in how they attack Utah tomorrow versus what they did yesterday. I don't remember the specifics though, Will.
No, you're good. You're good. And then I got Andrew's one of the biggest, if not the biggest, proponent of Victor Wembanyama and tanking for the Rockets this year. So what is tanking to you? What does that look like?
Keep playing 21 years and old younger rotations and everything will be fine. Whatever happens is, you know, you want to be optimistic and say they're going to win a lot. I think that's unlikely. So, you know, take Eric Gordon out of the rotation, you know, trade him, get free him,
please,
and then let the rest of the guys go. I think the tanking will take care of itself. Will, and there's any way that team with no veterans is going to probably do better than the fifth, sixth worst record. And that's enough lottery odds to beat it, to beat the chances. That's what tanking is to me. I don't advocate sitting Jalen down or sitting KPJ down. Let him go play. And I think that will take care of itself.
Yeah, that's not even tanking at that point. That's just shameless tanking. You're benching those guys. And we don't want to see that. You know, we
still want to see the OKC level and where SGA down for half the season.
Yeah, they already started doing that. but yeah.
I think they might have won by now because they were up. But and then the last question I have for you, we got the biggest Wembanyama stand that I know here. Is Victor Wembanyama going to be a Houston Rocket this next year?
We're manifesting. Yes, absolutely. Yes. And honestly, I think he and Jalen and Jabari, that's as good a chance you're going to have as a dynasty. That's the Astros translated into the MLB with George Springer, Jose Altuve, and Alex Bregman. Right. So go win the World Series. But hey, literally, it's only a 14% chance, best case, unless the Nets fall into the lottery and we get a few extra percentage points from the pick swap. So you know, don't hold your breath. You know, no one's thinking it's a likely, it's a really great chance, but if there's anyone to go all out for to maximize your chances, it's the best, no doubt the best prospect since LeBron, maybe the best prospect since Lou Alcindor. So do everything you can without being totally shameless and hope for the lottery gods to fall in our favor next May.
Yeah. May even be the best prospect of all time, as Wojnarowski said on ESPN. You know, that's how good he is. So I definitely agree with Andrew.
He could very well be. Mm-hmm. Just don't go to San Antonio.
No, please not.
Wendy in the San Antonio system is, jeez. That seems like a San Antonio pick, man. Like that just seems,
yeah, it is.
It just seems like it. But that's all I have for you, Andrew. Thank you for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. I think this was like a really informative episode. So I thank you for coming on and gracing us with your knowledge. Once again, go ahead and let everybody know where they can find you on Twitter. Anything else you want to plug real quick before we get out of here?
Well, it's only Twitter. Andrew Soukup, ASOUKUPTX on Twitter. Thanks for having me on, guys. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I want to say really quickly, Andrew, it was good to have you on. You're definitely going to be on the show again. So again, longer episode, but we enjoyed hearing your knowledge today. And as always, you know, for the listeners, if you're still listening, hour 20 in, we really appreciate you. Hit that subscribe button if you're enjoying the conversations. We'll be back next Monday to talk, you know, Rockets hoops again. But as always, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at BradoNBA. I got those stats and highlights for you. So that's all I have to say. But again, lastly, Andrew, thanks for coming on.
Yeah. And like I said earlier today, Bias Houston on Instagram and Twitter. Continue to like, comment, and subscribe on the Brad and Will YouTube channel. We appreciate you guys supporting us on that front. And like Brad said, we'll see you guys next Monday. Peace.